Thanks, Sita Lee, the goody-goody, does not have one iota of trouble using all the stuff I steal for her. Every time I fork over something, she says, Lulu, you are sending your butt off. But you should just see her whipping out that mascara wand like there's no tomorrow. I run all over town copping things for her, put my reputation on the line. For the past year, it has been me and me alone keeping her and Bonnie Belle white-white, which she loves, loves, loves to put under her eyebrows. I brought her Yardley eyeliner, eyeshadow, and oatmeal soap that costs a fortune. And I've also brought her the Yardley Slicker lip gloss, which Mama says is not half as good as plain old Vaseline. Mama also says that oatmeal soap is not half as good as plain old Camay with a quarter ounce of cold cream. Sita claims Mama says all this just so she won't have to spend money on my big sister's beauty. When Sita read in 17 that Yardley was the only makeup to use, I had to make the jump up from stealing at Woolworths to your more expensive stores. Now, see, I had it down at Woolworths. I know those bins and shelves inside and out. I know just how to browse, looking like an innocent child who wouldn't steal a number two pencil, even if you gave her the chance. I am not dumb. I always buy me something, like a magazine, and sit at the lunch counter and drink a Coke and act very natural. I pay for my Coke, and then I just wander around looking. You have to always buy something. That throws them off the track. I buy some little whatnot, and then I stuff my gifts in my pockets or my purse. Rule numero uno, you never set foot in a store with a big purse. It's the first thing they look for. You got to have you a classy little purse that nobody would ever think you'd use to stash stolen goods in. I walk right up to the cash register, and I say, "Good afternoon, ma'am. How you doing?" Then they say back, "Fine, how you?" And I say, just like Mama, "Marvelous, couldn't be better." Then I pay for my whatnot with my allowance, counting out the nickels and quarters, and they just smile at me and give me a piece of super bubble because I'm so cute. My insides might be shaking like Mama's hands in the morning, but on the outside, I am cool as a cucumber. Once I get out of the store, I run around the corner to the covered bus stop where all the colored maids wait. Then I take out all my free stolen goodies and examine them, and I feel like $1,000,000. I love it. I get so excited, I can hardly stand it. One time I was so happy that I asked somebody's maid if she wanted a compact I'd just stolen. I said, "Go ahead, take it. It's a gift." But she said, "No, thank you. I already got me one." I never plan what I'm going to take. I just go browsing and see what catches my eye. Sometimes it'll be something real stupid, like a tiny tube of Prel shampoo. But my favorite things are lingerie and makeup. I can take what I want for free because I am so good. The fuddy-duddy sales ladies just look at me and smile, and I steal them blind, right from under their noses. At Woolworths, I get all my Maybelline eyelash colors and sable brown and sky blue eyeshadow and Max Factor brownish black mascara wands that I give to Sita. And I get my lipsticks and any color fingernail polish a person could want. I brought Mama home 5 different shades of red nail polish. I am the one responsible for introducing her to Aladdin's Fire when she had been using only Rich Girl Red on her toenails for years and years. When I gave it to her, she said, "Oh, Lulu Cakes, you shouldn't have gone and spent all your allowance on me." So I said, "Well, Mama, maybe you could think about raising my allowance a little." And do you know, that is exactly what she did, right there on the spot. Which, of course, meant she raised Sitters, Little Sheps, and Baylor's, too. Even Stephen is what Mama says. I take care of myself. I take care of all of them, in my way. I went right out after that and stole Mama a Ronson cigarette lighter that flips up with a sharp little click. She just adores that lighter. Every time she uses it, she says to the Yayas, "Y'all know Lulu gave this to me." And Carol and Niecy and sometimes Teensy say, "Oh, isn't that the sweetest?" And I stand there and smile and suck in their cigarette smoke, which I crave. I have my own stash of cigarettes that me and my best friend Amy smoke anytime we feel like it. We do it at her house because her mother is never home. She is having an affair with a world history professor at LSU Thornton. We saw them kissing in the parking lot behind St. Cecilia's Hospital one time when we were riding our bikes. Amy's mother was sitting there in her station wagon wearing her ladies' auxiliary volunteer uniform, kissing on that professor like, "I'll get out." Amy said you could tell they were tongue-kissing because of the way their heads moved. Your head moves different when you tongue-kiss because of the suction. I haven't tongue-kissed yet, but Amy has. She says it's not all it's cracked up to be, that sometimes it can make you gag. But I think it must have something going for it since the penguins say it's a mortal sin. So, I had been making do at Woolworths. Then Sitta discovers from 17 that the doll and things I've been bringing her are cheap cosmetics that only trailer trash would wear. She says, don't bother bringing me any more of that tacky junk. I would rather look homely than cheap. From here on out, it's Yardley for me or nothing at all. Mind you, she read this from a 17 that I stole for her. The big fat back-to-school issue that almost got me nabbed, but that I managed to get away with due to the baggy shorts I was wearing that day, and to the fact that I am just plain superior at what I do. Like I said, it was that 17 that caused me to widen my horizons. I had to make the jump all the way up to Wayland's department store. Their cosmetics counter is on the first floor near the glass doors off the street. The second you walk in there, you get a whiff of the newest perfume. And there is Rosalind, the cosmetics lady, in her white smock, just waiting to pounce on some rich lady and rub makeup all over her face and squeal, "It's you! Oh, it is so you!" Mama uses Daddy's charge account at Wayland's, so I have been known there since the day I was born, which is very dangerous in one way and very helpful in another. It means I don't look too suspicious, just taking my time. But if I ever did get caught, Mama would probably belt whip the skin off me. I wait until Rosalind is busy contouring some old fat butt's cheeks, and then I steal only one or two Yardley things at a time. Well, maybe three or four. I cup them in my hand, don't even spend the time to put them in my pocket, just put them in my hand and walk out of the store. The first time I did it, I almost wet my pants, stealing from Wayland's. Wayland's, where every time Mama walks in with the yaw-yaw, she says, "Hello, darling," to all the sales ladies, like she is the queen and they are her servants. Wayland's, where Mama blows cigarette smoke right into the shoe salesman's face and asks him, "Honey, would you mind running upstairs and getting me a cold Coke? Because my throat is just parched." Yeah. I was nervous the first few times, but after that, it got to be a good kind of nervous. Finally, I got so good that I actually stepped over to the Wayland's jewelry counter and picked myself up a pair of Monet earrings in the shape of seashells. I love them. They are so rich looking. They go with the diamond dental ring I won playing bingo with Buggy at Our Lady of Divine Compassion on Las Vegas night. My grandmother was so jealous she could have spit. But she just bit on her old chapped-up lips. Tough. I'm the one that won that ring. Won it fair and square, and nobody can say a thing about it. They didn't have any rules saying that a child could not win a diamond dental ring. But after my big win, they put an age limit on the more expensive prizes. That is just like the Catholics, is what my daddy said. I wear that ring all the time, everywhere. I don't even take it off to bathe. Mama would snatch it up and sell it for the money and swear it got sucked in the vacuum cleaner. I am not dumb. My diamond dinner ring is worth something. It might come in handy if I ever decide I need to make a quick getaway out of this place. I steal for myself and for the people who deserve gifts in my book. You take my best friend, Amy. She would love to steal, but she is just not brave enough. We stand in front of her mirror and practice being models. Sometimes I let her wear some of the stuff I've stolen in exchange for letting me hide it over at her house. Her mother never goes in her room, only her maid, who isn't like Willetta at all, but more like plain hired help. My very, very favorite thing that I have stolen so far is an aqua chiffon nightgown with spaghetti straps. It is so beautiful and so European. I put it on in the dressing room at Wayland's, then I tucked it into my jeans, pulled my LSU sweatshirt on over it, and just walked out of the store, right out onto Cypress Street. Can you imagine? I am the best. Me and Amy take turns trying it on and practicing runway modeling and turns. That nightgown cost $20, and I got it for free. I have to keep it over at Amy's, because Mama would know for sure that something was up and whip the hell out of me, which I am not about to let happen. I know what that woman can do once she gets started. I am too good at this to let anything slip through the cracks, let me tell you. I cover my tracks. You have to. It's the small things I keep at home, like the little satin bikini panties with the butterflies on them. I hand wash them myself and dry them in my closet at night. Then I slip them on and wear them to school. Only I know how gorgeous and sexy my lingerie is under that dumbass Divine Compassion uniform. I just love how those panties poof out in the back. As far as I'm concerned, my own mother does not pay enough attention to lingerie. She just wears plain old white panties. If she got in a car wreck and died with them on, she wouldn't have to be exactly humiliated. But still, she could do so much better. After all, she is a yaw-yaw. I love getting presents for everybody. It's so easy, I can't believe it. For Bayla and Little Shep, I go to Central Louisiana Sporting Goods. I walk in there, and I buy me a bandana and maybe a package of new ping pong balls. Then I walk over to the bin where they keep the pellets for my brother's Benjamin pump guns, and I snatch up as many of those little round green cans as I can. Then I pay for my stuff and say real sweet to Mr. Cuvillon, who has worked there for 1,000,000 years. How you doing, Mr. Cuvillon? How's your hunting? He hunts out at the duck camp with Daddy sometimes. If he only knew that I was lightening his pellet load any time I feel like it. Little Shep thanks me for the pellets. He says, "Hey, Lulu, didn't know you cared." And then he treats me real nice for about 2 days afterward. After giving Bayla pellets a couple of times, he says to me, "You know, Lulu, if you really want to give me a present, could you make it something other than pellets? I hate pellets. I don't even know why Daddy gave me a stupid gun." I say, "Well, what do you want, Bay?" And you know what he says? My little brother says, "I want that antique globe of the world at Miss Hannaway's antique store." Oh, sure. Even I couldn't pull off stealing a globe of the goddamn world. What would I do? Stick it under my blouse and pretend I'm pregnant? My little brother always has peculiar ideas about what he wants. He is not as easy to satisfy as Little Shep, I am telling you. At first, the boys don't realize that I'm stealing their presents. When they finally catch on, all they say is, "Boy, Lulu, if you get caught, you're really going to get it." But they don't tell. Sita's not going to tell either. She doesn't even want to know where I get all her stuff. She pretends everything just appears. She goes to confession and tells Pigface the priest all about her 84,000 impure things, and then she turns the other way when I dump her stolen stash on the bed. She acts like it's magic. Oh, God, my absolute favorite spot in the world to steal things is the pro shop at the Garnett Parish Golf and Country Club. We don't belong because my daddy says they're all a bunch of whiny babies, but Amy's family belongs, and her mother plays tennis there 3 times a week. Me and Amy go out there with her to swim, and we eat in a dining room where we can charge whatever we want to her daddy. We order club sandwiches, French fries, and pecan pie a la mode, iced tea, and just everything, and Amy just signs a name on the check. But what I really go out there for is the pro shop. There is this darling hunk working in there who is a senior, and Amy goes and flirts her butt off with him. That girl might be too scared to steal, but she is really good with boys. I don't care what age. She says it's not important that you put out, but that you act like you would if you felt like it. While she is batting her eyes at the senior hunk, I browse around and steal my brains out. I adore stealing from the country club. I go into the dressing room and pull on 3 different sizes of tennis shorts under my wraparound skirt, and then I walk out past Amy and the senior hunk and say, "Meet you out by the pool, Amy." Later, she meets me in the ladies' lounge with the rattan chaise lounge, and I show her all my prizes. She says, "Really, boss, Lulu." When I get home, I give Sitta, Lil Shep, and Bayla their shorts, and they just ooh and aah, especially Lil Shep, who plays tennis at City Park with his friends. He's playing in the city tournaments and everything. Mama says he takes after her. She was captain of the tennis team at Thornton High, which she won't let anybody forget. She says it's a sin and a shame that my daddy deprives little Shep of being a member of the country club where he could really perfect his serve. Those people at the Garnett Parish Golf and Country Club Pro Shop deserve being stolen from. My daddy says they are a bunch of lazy bums who sit around and live off other people's money and have been snobs all their lives. My daddy says they were born with silver spoons shoved up their asses and have never grown anything in their born days. Mama tells him, Shep, I wish you wouldn't talk like that around the children. And he says, Vivian, what I'm saying is mild compared to the garbage that spews out of your mouth when you're drinking. At the pro shop, I have also gotten 2 sports shirts and 10 packages of golf balls, even though nobody in our family plays golf. Me and little Shep like to cut those golf balls open, like you're not supposed to do because they'll explode and put your eye out. It's real fun. It's like there's a little prize inside that you have to work to get at. First off, you have to cut off the white outside plastic part of the ball. That's the hardest part and the most dangerous. It's better if you use a saw instead of a knife, but either way, the actual cutting could cause you to lose 2 or 3 fingers and go through life a cripple. But getting the outside of the ball off is really neat, almost as good as peeling off a sunburn. Then comes the best part, because under the hide is a long skinny rubber band and that the Santa is wrapped up in. It's like rubber band spaghetti, and it must be a mile long when you unwind it. Then you finally get down to this marble-sized little ball. It takes a lot of work to get to it, but it is really worth it. One time when I stole the most expensive balls, they turned out to have this kind of goo at the center. Bayla got scared because he thought it would burn his skin off, and all he was doing was watching. I don't know where he gets the thoughts in his head. Anyway, my daddy is the one I would really like to get something good for. Just surprise him with something out of this world and have him scoop me up and say, Lulu Cakes, you're my sweet patootie. But what are you going to get my daddy? I got him a couple of boxes of .22 caliber bullets once, but big fat deal, he has 84,000 of them already. He hardly even noticed when I gave them to him. I had to think and think about what to get for him. He is a tough customer. Finally, it came to me, though. So I get myself over to the cowboy store of Thornton on the double. I have to ride a city bus to get out there, which Mama would kill me for if she found out, because only white trash ride buses. But I've got to get there. I walk in, and it smells all like tack and leather and harnesses and saddle soap. The floors are old wood ones that squeak when you take a step. It's kind of like being in a cleaned-up barn or something. There are 2 sales ladies who look almost just alike, except one is strawberry blonde and the other is black-haired. They're both wearing cowgirl pants and shirts and boots. I smile at them, and I'm relieved to see that they don't know me from Adam. Mama and us never shop there, only my daddy. Mama says the cowboy store is too country. So, I am a total stranger in there. I browse around looking for something for Daddy, and the only thing that really gets me going is this straw cowboy hat that he could wear in the fields. I finger it and try it on. It's way too big for me, so I figure it will fit him fine. It smells like hay, and when I hold it up and look through it, I can see light through the straw weave. I think, this is the hat that could really stop the hot sun from beating down on my daddy, from burning him up and wearing him out. Now, a cowboy hat is not your easiest thing to steal. I mean, you might as well try to walk off with that antique globe that Bayla wants. You've got to be a true ace, which I luckily happen to be. I go up to the counter and buy some saddle soap that Daddy uses on his boots. Then I wander around, watching the 2 ladies close and waiting for them to turn their backs. Those sales ladies are stuffed into their cowgirl pants like that Italian fennel sausage my daddy buys from Di Stefano's. I like the way they look, the hair all like Loretta Lynn, and the way they walk is kind of half sexy, half horsey. They both have on real pointy boots and bright blue eyeshadow, which I can definitely tell you is straight out of the discount off-brand bin at Woolworths. If there's one thing I know, it's my cosmetics. If Mama saw them, she would sneer her face off. But Mama isn't anywhere around. Finally, the phone rings and one of them picks it up. She's got that twangy voice like the people who live year-round at Spring Creek where we go in the summer. The other lady takes out an emery board and starts filing her nails. I'm the only customer in the whole place. This is my chance. And I reach up and pull that straw cowboy hat down off the shelf. I stick it in front of my stomach and walk straight out of that store. I am sweating like a field hand. This is the best heist I have ever pulled off. The perfect gift for my daddy. Finally. The kind of thing he really needs. Those seed company caps he wears don't do shit to protect him from the sun. I'm dizzy, and my blood is pumping so hard, and I'm trying to remember where to go to catch the bus. I pause for a minute to catch my breath, and that is what trips me up. The lady with the blonde hair comes running out on the porch of the store where there are saddles hanging all along the railing. She runs down the steps yelling, "Hey, you, little girl, little girl!" I act like I don't hear her. I think about running, but running is so dumb. Running is the kind of chicken-ass thing Sitta would do. I don't need to run, I think. I can handle this. I turn around to the lady and say, "Yes, ma'am." So sweet that you'd want to adopt me in a split second if you heard me. And she comes right up to me with her butt in those tight pants, and she says, "If you're fixing to run off with that hat, you got another thing coming, girly girl." I look down at the hat all ashamed-like to give myself a chance to work up some tears. Then I look up at her, right straight in the eyes, and I say, "I'm sorry. I really am. I apologize." The whole time I'm saying this, I am sobbing my eyes out. "Don't you give me no boo-hoo act," she says. "Who are your parents? I'm fixing to go inside and call them up right now. You're lucky I don't call the Louisiana State Police." I wipe a tear from my eyes and try to talk just like her. "I don't have no parents," I say. "They was killed in a car wreck just 5.5 months after I was born. I was getting the hat for my brother. He works driving a tractor over in Bunkie. He's 16. He takes care of me." Then I work myself up into a state until I actually feel like I am an orphan who lives with her only relative in a shack on the edge of a cotton field. I don't stop crying until the lady puts her arm around me and says, "Let's us go on back inside. It's too darn hot out here." Back in the store, she says, "Well, Verna, I caught up with our little sneak thief." Verna glares at me, and I squeeze out another round of tears for her. The blonde-haired one whispers to Verna, "Both her parents are dead. Car crash when she was an infant." Then Verna looks at me real kind-like. I can't believe it. The two of them stand there for a minute with their hands on their hips, and finally Verna says, "Well, Maxine, what are we gonna do with her?" Maxine says, "Well, we could throw her in the Angola State Prison for life." And then she pauses and gives me this long look. "Or," she continues, "we could get her an orange crush. Do you like orange crushes?" she asks me. "Oh, yes, ma'am," I say. "Orange crush is my very favorite cold drink. I adore orange crush." And Maxine goes in the back and opens an icebox and brings me out an orange crush in a tall, cold bottle. "Sit yourself down on that stool and drink it," she says. I do what she says. "All right now," Verna asks me, "what's your name?" "Corina," I lie. "Corina, Corina, where you been so long?" It's my daddy's favorite song in the world. He sings it in the truck when we ride back in the fields, and he hums it while he's shaving in his bathroom. "Corina what?" Maxine asks. "Axel," I tell them. "Corina Axel," tasting the name in my mouth. "My mama and daddy were Axels from Greenville, Mississippi. Y'all might have heard the name." No, honey, Verna says. I don't reckon I have, but I'm sure they were real fine people. She says it like she doesn't want to hurt my feelings. Then I get quiet, like I figure I better. Best to just sit there and let them feel sorry for me. Mama always says it's running my mouth so much that gets me in trouble to begin with. You say you live with your brother? Maxine asks. She starts up with her emery board again, so I figure they're not going to turn me over to the cops. Yes, ma'am, I say. He tries to take good care of me. He quit school to support us. He gets real sunburned in the field and don't have no straw hat, just this old felt one that's too hot to wear in the summer. I was getting the hat for him. I'm awfully sorry. I am actually becoming Corina Axel, and I like her, too. She is pitiful and plucky at the same time, the kind of kid people always want to help out. My brother's name's Bucky, I lie to them. Verna reaches into her shirt pocket and takes a Viceroy out of the pack. She reaches under the counter and pulls out a big box of kitchen matches, strikes one, and lights a cigarette. Trey, tacky, Mama and the Yaw-Yaws would say. My mama used to smoke that exact same brand, I tell Verna, forgetting for a second that I was 5 1/2 months old when she died. I thought you was only an infant when your mama passed on, Maxine says. These ladies are sharp, I think. You better watch what you say, Lulu. My brother Bucky told me, I continue. Bucky has told me every single thing he can remember about our mama. Mentally calculating his age, I said. He was about 5 when they died. He remembers what she smelled like and everything. Then I thought, shut up, don't push your luck. But I can't stop myself. This orange crush sure is good, I tell them. I don't get to have cold drinks very often. Me and Bucky can only afford ice water. I roll my eyes around the store like I have never been in such a fine establishment. That sure is an awful pretty belt buckle you're wearing, I compliment Maxine. Mama would drop dead before she would let a belt buckle of a man and woman square dancing onto her waist. She would melt that thing down for scrap metal just to keep it from offending her eyes. I can feel myself starting to really like Verna and Maxine. They are A-OK in my book. They're my kind of folks. Thank you, Corina, Maxine says. My husband gave me this belt buckle for our 10th anniversary. Well, it sure is pretty. You're lucky to have a husband like that. I sure wish I could have known my daddy. Then Maxine gets all soft and turns to Verna, and they pass a signal between them with their eyes. I'm thinking they are either going to reach for the phone and call the state police, and I'm going to need Perry Mason quick, or they're going to let me right off the hook. Verna nods to Maxine, and the two of them stand a little closer together. They look kind of like sisters off that show Louisiana Hayride, but wilder. They're both leaning over a display case filled with horseshoe cufflinks and fancy spurs and lariats. Tell you what, Verna finally says, how about we give you that hat? You can hand it to Bucky and tell him it came from two of his admirers. Maxine flicks her ash on the floor and says, tell him he's doing a fine job rearing you up all by himself, even if you do have some sticky fingers. I know I ought to feel guilty, but I don't. I am Corina Axel. I am an orphan. My mama and my daddy are dead. I start crying again, but this time they're not crocodile tears. They're real tears. From my dry heart. I can't believe y'all are being so nice to me, I tell them. No one has ever been this nice to me in my whole entire life. I will stay here and live with y'all, I think to myself. And they come and put their arms around me. It's like a fairy tale or something. When they hold me, I really haul off crying. Not the kind of tears that just turn on and off like a faucet, but tears that I don't know where they come from. Like they've been there on the edge waiting for a long time. I feel my hand reach up to pull at my hair the way I used to do when I was little. I want real bad to yank out two or three hairs and eat them, because that always used to calm me down. But Maxine takes my hand and says, "Oh, honey, don't pull on your hair. You've got the prettiest blonde hair in the world. I wish I had me a little girl with hair pretty as yours." The way she says wish, it comes out sounding like worsh. I put my hand back in my lap and curl my fingers together. At first, Maxine and Verna look like cartoon sisters, but now I see how different they are from each other. Maxine smells like Evening in Paris cologne, but Verna smells more like pine straw. And Verna is a little older. She's got a mole on her cheek. Not a mole like the nuns with hair sticking out of it, but a mole that's almost a beauty mark. I let them hug me for a while. When I'm finally able to stop crying, I say, "Thank you, Verna. Thank you, Maxine. Thank you both very much." The bell on the door tinkles then, and a man walks into the store. His boots hit the wooden floor hard and heavy, and he brings field dust inside with him. I pray he doesn't know my daddy. Verna breaks away to help the man, and Maxine says, "Well, Miss Pris, I certainly hope your brother enjoys the new hat you bought for him. If it doesn't fit perfect, you bring it on back, and we'll get him the right size, okay?" "Yes, ma'am," I tell her. "Thank you again." Then she puts the hat in a box for me. She whispers, "You take care of yourself now, you hear? And watch those sticky fingers. Not everybody in the world is me and Maxine. You know what I mean?" "Yes, ma'am, I do. I know what you mean." And I walk out the door. Outside, the light is all hot and white, like when you step out of the Paramount after a good movie in the middle of the day, and you get all blinded. I feel dizzy again, and it takes me a long time to find the bus stop. When I finally do, I go and get me a window seat and crack open the window and let the air blow on me. I give the hat to my daddy that night when he gets home. "Here, Daddy," I tell him, "I got a present for you." But when he tries it on, it just perches up there on his head like a stupid little Shrine of Fez or something.
"Welcome men have got big heads, Lulu," he says. "Don't you know that by now? We come from a long line of big heads. Maybe you ought to just give this thing a little shape. It's more likely to fit him."
So I give it to my brother, and he likes it good enough. But it was a gift for my daddy, not for my brother. And that makes me real tired. Later, in my room, I write a letter to Maxine and Verna at the cowboy store. I disguise my handwriting and leave off my return address. I write, "Dear Maxine and Verna, my brother Bucky and me want to thank you a whole bunch for the hat. It keeps the sun off his face in the fields and fits him just fine. We both want to tell you what good people you are. Please don't y'all ever change. Your friend, Corina Axel." At night in my bed, when everyone else is asleep, I lay there and feel sad. I can't go back and exchange that hat for the right size. I can't go see Verna and Maxine again. I've used them up, and now I can't have them anymore. Maybe it's true what Mama says. All I am is gimme, gimme, gimme. And after a while, people get sick of me. Well, Mama ought to know. She is the queen of gimme. Where do you think I learned every single thing I know? Hair of the Dog, Siddeley, 1965. It's Saturday morning, and we're all riding over to the Hotsy-Totsy room with Mama and Caro. We have to get Mama's high heel from under the porte cochere where she forgot it the night before. Little Shep, Lulu, Baylor, and I are packed into the back seat of the T-Bird like sardines, and Mama and Caro have the air conditioner cranked up full blast. Caro spent the night with us at Pecan Grove. even though Mama originally started out the night with Daddy, who ended up not coming home at all. When Mama and Carol woke the whole house up coming in, I took one of Mama's Nitols that I had stashed in my nightstand and went back to sleep. But Lulu must have stayed up all night. When I got up, she looked all dazed, and she had another picked-at red spot on her head. I said, "Jesus, Lulu, have you been at it again? I don't see how anybody can actually eat their own hair." She said, "City, I try not to, really." "I know," I said, and rubbed a dab of Vaseline on the spot. "Now don't pick at it any more today, you hear me?" In the front seat of the car, Caro and Mama are wearing sunglasses, even though it's overcast outside. I put on my sunglasses, too. We just pull up in front of the hotsy-totsy room, and without the car hardly coming to a stop, Caro opens the door and scoops up Mama's ice-blue sling-back pump, and we drive off. The hotsy-totsy room is the only cocktail dance lounge of its kind in Thornton, and it is very popular because of the yah-yahs and their friends. It's a stucco building with sparkles built into it. Seashells are set in the concrete driveway, and at night, twinkly lights shine in the bushes. Every time Mama and Daddy walk in there, the band stops whatever they're doing and plays Moon River, Mama and Daddy's favorite song. After we pick up the high heel, Mama pulls out onto the service road and says, "Sitta, reach into that ice chest and get Caro and me those cold rags, will you?" I hand them the rags, and they each put one on their forehead. "What's wrong with y'all's heads, Mama?" Lil Shep asks. "We don't know," Mama says. "We both caught one of those little bugs that's going around," Caro explains. And they both give a little laugh. Mama turns to Caro and says, "I don't know about you, girl, but I'm sick as a dog." "Make that two dogs," Caro mumbles. "Drive a little smoother, will you?" "Well, I've got those damn little floaties in front of my eyes," Mama says. "They don't make for the best driving I've ever done in my life." "Well," says Caro, "we have got to stay on the move. I cannot bear the thought of seeing either one of those men we married until I feel a little more up to snuff. Plus," Mama says, pressing her finger to her right temple, "I don't want the party to end. It's hell this morning, but it was heaven last night. I haven't danced like that since high school." "You finally had some decent dance partners again, Vivi. That's why." Mama says, "Little pitches have big ears." I stare out the window and act like I'm not listening to every word that comes out of their mouths.
"Hell," Caro says, "you know damn well Shep has never been a dancer. The man might be able to grow cotton, but he's a slew-footed clod on the dance floor."
Mama giggles and says, "He tries."
"That's about the extent of it," Caro says. "He tries." "Well, it didn't slow me down any," Mama brags. "That's an understatement," Caro laughs. "We were magnificent. We danced with every man in the place at least twice." "Yeah," Mama says, "until we wore them out, or teed off their wives and had to start dancing with each other. Hell, Chick's the only male who can keep up with us. I knew I should have married him instead of letting Teensy have him. He was too short for you in high school, Vivi, and he's too short for you now," Caro says. "Well, he still could grow," Mama says and laughs. "Anyway, it was glorious," Caro says, "just like the old days. And, of course, those diet pills didn't hurt." "Not one bit," Mama says. Then she turns around and looks at the four of us. "How y'all doing, Spooks? Y'all hungry?"
"Yes, ma'am," we all say.
"Hold on, then," Mama says. "We'll get something in your pitiful stomachs before you know it."
We didn't eat any breakfast or anything. Mama didn't even try to fix my hair like she does every morning. My hair is almost down to my waist, and if it isn't done in a certain way, it just drives Mama to the insane asylum. She says with all my hair, I could easily look like poor white trash or a Pentecostal if I'm not careful.
This morning, though, she completely forgets about my hair, and I'm glad, because the way she usually whips it around feels like she really is trying to jerk me bald-headed. She always says, "That's the price you have to pay for beauty, Siddeley." "The thing is," Caro says, "Shep gets so burned up when the Yayas get together, it makes me want to kill him the way he talked to you last night. Saying you have never known how to act in public, Vivi." Caro says this in a voice like Daddy's. "Well," Mama says, "Shep was raised different than we were. That's no excuse for him to drive off and spend the night at the goddamn duck camp," Caro says. "If Chick hadn't driven us home, then I don't know what we would have done. It's not like Thornton is New York City when it comes to taxicabs at 4 a.m. Then she just snorts like she does not have the energy to go any further. "Don't you have a pillow anywhere in this car?" she asks Mama. Mama lets Caro boss her around and criticize her like nobody else ever can. Caro holds her wet rag in front of the air conditioner vent, then lays it over her whole face and leans back against the door. Mama drives real slow and careful, until she comes to an intersection, and then she speeds across real fast, stepping on the gas like she's afraid someone will slam into her. Then she slows down again and crawls the car along the street until she comes to the next intersection. We stop and fill up the car at Roland's Texaco, and then Mama drives us in fits and starts over to Shipshape Donuts. She leaves the car running, hands me $10, and says, "Go get whatever y'all want. Get us two huge coffees, black." They stay in the car, and we run in and get a dozen donuts and some cinnamon rolls, and Lulu gets four of her rum balls. She hoards those rum balls and eats them on the sly. We all get Cokes, too, even though Daddy says that having a cold drink before 12 noon is a whore's breakfast. Back in the car, those donuts are so soft and squashy and sweet, all warm out of the oven, and we sit in the back seat of the T-Bird and just eat and eat. Ooh, all that sugar and those Cokes on crushed ice just go down so good. Mama looks in the rearview mirror and says, "Lulu, put that donut back in the bag right this instant." Lulu says, "Oh, Mama, why?" Mama says, "Just do what I say. Trust me, you will live to regret that donut if you eat it. I'm only trying to save you from growing up to be a lard-ass like the women on your daddy's side of the family." "Do you think a cigarette will kill me?" she asks Caro. "I would not touch a ciggy with a 10-foot pole," Caro says. "Not until I swallow a hair of the dog that bit me." Mama sighs. "Thank God I have the yaw-yaws to tell me what to do." "Where in the hell are we going next?" Caro asks. Mama says, "Who cares? Let's bomb over to Chicken Teensy's and see if they're up yet. I hope they feel just as bad as we do." "Fine," Caro says, "just fine." And she settles back with the cold air blowing on her. Mama pulls the car out onto the almost empty street. Where is everybody? It feels like we're in a sort of Twilight Zone town. Little Shep pulls out his Etch-A-Sketch, and Lulu says, "Let me play." Little Shep says, "Shut up, Porky." She starts to cry, and I say, "Y'all cut that out. Mama doesn't feel good." Lulu sits there, sucking on a strand of her hair, and I give her a look like, "You remember what I told you, Baldy." I pull Nancy Drew and the Mystery of Lilac Inn out of my purse and try to forget where I am. The car is so crowded there isn't even enough room for us to hardly sit, let alone stash any of our stuff. So we have to squinch in together, and it is horrible being that crammed in. Mama and Daddy had a big fight over Mama getting the T-Bird because it's only built to seat four. But Mama says if she's going to haul us all over the place, she's going to do it in the car of her choice. When the six of us have to go somewhere together as a whole family, Daddy just follows behind in his truck. After four or five blocks, Mama says, "I simply cannot drive another inch. Caro, you have got to take over. The floaties are killing me." Caro groans, "You think I've got it any better?" When are these kids going to start being good for something? Let one of them drive.
We should be so lucky, Mama says, and starts to slide toward the passenger seat.
They climb over each other because neither one of them is about to step outside into the heat.
Caro gets in the driver's seat, and Mama props her foot up on the dash and complains,
If we didn't have kids, we could have cars with tinted windows.
We're modest, that's what we are, modest to the cause.
Caro laughs. She says, Blaine is probably still sound asleep, and I bet the boys are tearing my house to shreds.
Let 'em. I'm sick of that rat trap anyway.
And they both laugh and turn on the radio to some easy listening. The Yayas love easy listening whenever they catch one of their bugs. At Teensy and Chicks, we pull into the driveway and pile out of the car. Mama raps on the kitchen door like, shave and a haircut, 2 bits.
She says, they damn well better have a pitcher of Bloody Marys ready.
Ruffin, who is my age, answers the door. He still has on his cowboy pajamas.
Mama says, Hi, Ruff. Where are your mama and daddy?
Ruffin crosses his arms and says,
They're still asleep. Y'all better not wake them up or they'll kill you.
Caro says, Good boy. Then she and Mama push past him into the kitchen. We trail in behind them.
I say, Hi, Ruffin. He says, Y'all better get out of here. I mean it. Y'all better not make any noise.
All over the kitchen counters, there are those tiny cereal boxes you can eat right out of, and you can smell burnt toast in the air.
Ruffin says, Really, Vivi? If you wake them up, they're going to be really mad. They don't feel good.
Well, honey, Mama says, we don't either. And we want some company. Now take all the kids and y'all go play in traffic. Ruffin stands there looking stupid and hurt. Mama gives him a hug and says, Ruff, darling, I'm just kidding. Now y'all go watch some TV.
Ruffin mumbles, Our antenna is broken.
Mama ignores him and says to Caro, Plan 27B, which is their code for move on, no matter what. The two of them head back to Teensy and Chick's bedroom. The door is shut, and you can hear their big window air conditioner blasting away inside. Ruffin gives one last warning.
I mean it. They're not going to like this.
But Mama and Caro burst into Chick and Teensy's room and just jump into bed with them and yell, Get up! Y'all think y'all can sleep all day while we're awake suffering? Get up! We stand at the door and watch. Teensy's nightclub dress is on the chair next to the bed, and she has on this poofy peignoir. Teensy props herself up in bed and stares at Mama and Caro like they are Ubangis. It looks like there are pieces of red thread stuck to her eyeballs.
You damn fool, she said. Get out of here. Y'all think because I'm the only Yaya with a fun husband you can come in here and wake me up like this?
Chick just rolls over without opening his eyes. He kind of waves his hand like he's swatting flies. Chick is real little and wiry and cute, kind of like a horse jockey. He is sort of an honorary male Yaya. When his hand reaches out, you can see his silk pajama sleeve. I never realized grown men actually slept in pajamas, except in movies. Daddy always sleeps in his boxer shorts.
Come on, Teensy, Mama says. Come on, Chick. Don't y'all want to get up and play? We drove all the way over here just to commiserate.
Da hell y'all did, Teensy growls and turns her pillow over to the cool side.
Y'all came over here because you're scared to death to face Blaine and Shep. I can't believe some of the stunts y'all pulled last night. Y'all were out of control, even for Yayas.
We didn't do anything you wouldn't have done if you hadn't married Chick, Mama says.
Teensy says, Y'all are terrible. Now get out of here.
Go find somebody else to torture.
Mama and Caro just keep lying on the bed like they think she is kidding.
I'm serious, Teensy yells. Y'all go on. Chick and I are going to sleep till 3, then get up and have Eggs Benedict. Hit the road.
Party poopers, Caro says.
What a bunch of spooks, Mama says.
Then Mama and Carol both climb out of the bed and start to lead us out to the car, but not without checking the liquor cabinets first.
"Where's your Mama's vodka?" Carol asks Ruffin.
"I don't know," Ruffin says. "She hides it."
"Oh, well," Mama says, and gives Ruffin a kiss on the forehead. Then she opens the kitchen door, and we all walk out again into the hot gray day and climb into the hot, stuffy car. Mama and Carol look at each other, and Carol says, "Those SOBs. I was counting on them for a bloody." Mama says, "Well, we can have one of the beers out of the cooler."
"I will die before I drink any of that alligator piss," Carol says. "I need a real drink."
Mama looks at Carol and says, "Abra." Carol winks at her and says, "Cadabra." Then Carol guns the car in the direction of Davis Street, which means the Abracadabra liquor store. Usually we go to the Abracadabra at night when Mama and Daddy run out of something or need to stock up. They go inside and leave us in the back of Daddy's pickup. It's always dark all around us, with the only light coming from the blazing fluorescent lights inside the store and the sign that hangs out front. The Abracadabra sign is huge, pastel-colored neon, about the size of a Brahma bull. You just can't help but be in awe of it. At the top of the sign is an angel with a skull for a face. Its neon wings pulsate so fast that it looks like the angel is panicked, like it's trying to get away from something. When the bottom of the angel flicks back and forth, it looks like a serpent tail stabbing the night air. Underneath the angel, the name Abracadabra is spelled out with the kind of little white bulbs that movie stars have on their dressers. Below that, the words liquor, party foods, ice, and gifts pulse in green, pink, yellow, and blue. Just the letters in those words are scary to look at, like they have a mysterious power that nothing can control. That panicked angel lights up the four of us in the back of Daddy's truck and makes us easy targets for all those things that hide in the dark. If there are stars in the sky, you can't even see them, because that sign blinds your eyes to anything else. The place isn't nearly so spooky during the day. We pull up to the drive-up window, and Mama and Carol order a fifth of Smirnoff and a bunch of V8 juice from a guy with a transistor radio playing the colored music station. Daddy never lets us listen to that station. The Yah-Yahs love it, though. Mama says, "Just put that on Shep Walker's account, darling." Then she turns around to us and says, "Y'all want anything?" "Yeah," I say, "some Fritos."
"What did you say?"
Mama asks me. I correct myself. "Yes, ma'am, we would love some Fritos. Thank you for asking."
"That's better," Mama says. "Throw in a couple of bags of Frito-Lays, would you, Tony?"
The man says, "We ain't got no Fritos, just pig skins."
"Okay, then, pig skins,"
Mama tells him, and he flips three bags of pig skins into the back seat. I am not about to touch them. Eating the skin of dead pigs, fried in their own bacon grease, is something I will not do, even if I'm starving to death on a desert island. Of course, Lulu snorks them right down, and little Shep says,
"Hey, Porky, why don't you just inhale them through your snout?"
It's not that Lulu is really all that fat. She just has a round little face and cheeks that make her look chubbier than she is. Still, it's a habit for everyone to pick on her for being a little fatty. You can upset her with it every time, so we tease her just because it's so much fun. Mama and Carol mix up some drinks in Dixie cups, then we head out again. Mama lights up a cigarette and things are looking better. It's cool in the car, and the cigarette smoke smells familiar. Then, out of the blue, Caro pulls over to the side of the road and slams on the brakes, opens the door, leans her head out, and throws up on the street.
"Son of a bitch," she says. "Son of a goddamn bitch."
Mama says, "You poor baby, you all right?"
"Oh, I'm fine. Never been better."
It's your damn cigarette. I told you I cannot handle smoke until I've had the chance to get a drink down.
I'm so sorry, baby doll, Mama says, and she takes her wet cloth and dabs Caro's face with it.
You want a lifesaver to take the taste out? Should I take you home? God, no, Caro says. You just drive. I'll be fine once I get down a drink or two, and don't you dare light up another ciggy, or I will strangle you with my bare hands.
So Mama gets behind the wheel, and she says,
I just hope the floaties don't cause me to run this damn T-bird into the ditch.
She sits there for a minute, idling the motor, sipping her Bloody Mary. Then she says, like it's the most original idea she's ever had, and she should get an award for it.
I've got it! We'll drive out to Lucille's. She's always ready for a party.
Caro is mixing another drink, mumbling,
these Dixie cups are so damn tiny.
Well, Caro, Mama asks, what do you think?
Inspired, Vivi darling. Simply inspired.
Drive on.
You can tell they're both starting to feel a little better as we drive down the tree-lined state highway to Nacogdoches. Miss Lucille lives alone up on Cane River in this huge antebellum house. She divorced her husband and took him for every cent he had. She's older than the Yayas, and they all worship her. She's sort of their living idol. Miss Lucille was once a very famous horsewoman until she was thrown by her favorite horse. And she just quit riding after that. She told everyone it wasn't that she was hurt or anything. It was just the way that horse had betrayed her. Sometimes she just shows up in Thornton in her chocolate brown Cadillac to do some shopping, and a whole party will start up just because she is in town. Mama and the Yayas have known her for years, ever since they were in New Orleans one weekend on a shopping trip, and they met her one night at the carousel room in the Monteleone Hotel. They just fell in love with her, and all of them ended up riding the train back together, and they have been friends ever since. Miss Lucille's house is a huge place at the end of this long drive of oak trees with trailing Spanish moss all over them. The house has 8 big white columns across the front and this deep veranda upstairs and down. It's the kind of gracious old home that the Yayas adore visiting. But you couldn't give them a place like that because there isn't any central air conditioning or a dishwasher. We pull up the long drive, with Mama blowing the horn like she always does. All of us have our eyes glued to the windows to catch a glimpse of Miss Lucille naked. Miss Lucille is an artist now, and she always works on her sculptures while she's buck naked. We can barely see her throw on her kimono and tie the sash before the T-bird comes to a stop in her circular drive. She runs out, shouting at the top of her lungs, Vivi! Caro! Petite Monstre! Hey! Miss Lucille always shouts. It isn't that she is hard of hearing. She just loves to talk loud, Mama says. Around her, you have to shout back, or there just isn't any conversation. Sometimes the way she yells, you don't know whether she is really, really happy to see you or whether she is mad at you for invading her privacy. Lucille, darling, Mama shouts back, although you can see her wince like it's killing her head. They all hug each other like it's been 50 years since they've gotten together. Miss Lucille uses a long cigarette holder and smokes like Marlene Dietrich. Every time you watch her take a puff, you think you're in Europe. Her hair is gray everywhere, except in front, where it's bright red. And she has these large hands that look like a pretty man's. Mama and the Yayas love playing bourre with her because she's such a superior cheater. They claim they learned everything they know about cheating from her.
She says, well, what are we drinking? G&T's?
We follow her through the house, and she stops to put on an Edith Piaf record on the stereo. Then we go into the big kitchen where she mixes up a huge pitcher of gin and tonic like it is lemonade.
Miss Lucille has 5 golden retrievers that lounge around inside that house, and they yelp and growl when we accidentally step on their tails. Those dogs just go with Miss Lucille's house, like they're mink coats or something draped across the furniture. Baylor stares around the house, peeking in every room we pass, like he always does. He says, "I'm gonna have me a house just like this when I grow up." Miss Lucille hands Mama and Caro their G&Ts and then says to Bay,
"Well, handsome, are you still going to come live with me as soon as you turn 18?
When she winks at him, he goes over and holds onto Mama's leg. But Mama says, "Bay, honey, don't hang all over me, please. Not today." Lulu says, "Miss Lucille, can I go upstairs and take a nap?" She does this every single time we come here. She has a thing about those bedrooms. Miss Lucille has fans set up everywhere you turn, and it makes you almost forget how hot and sticky it is without air conditioning. Carol says, "You must show us what you've been working on, Seal."
"Love to," Miss Lucille says. "Absolutely love to."
They always ask to see her sculptures. But whenever I ask Mama about Miss Lucille, Mama says, "Honey, Lucille is more an artist in her mind than anything else." Mama also says, "You're not a real artist unless you live in New York City." Miss Lucille takes us on a tour of her sculptures, which are all over the house and out on the veranda. Every single one she points to, she says,
"Of course, it's unfinished. You can see that for yourself."
One particular sculpture scares me to death. Miss Lucille calls it the Sleeping Bitch. It has been at her house for as long as I can remember. It is a woman taking a nap. Her whole body looks relaxed, except for her face, which looks like it's witnessing something so horrible her eyes could burn up. Her mouth looks like she's trying to scream, but can't get any sound out. It always reminds me of a dream I have where I'm grunting and sweating, but I can't squeeze out one single sound. Every time I see that sculpture, there is something ever so slightly different about it, like Miss Lucille works on it for about 5 minutes a month. After we view the art, the ladies settle in the canvas butterfly chairs out on the veranda, and little Shep and me go out in the yard to play. Over beyond the cedars are millions of crepe myrtle trees, and during the summer they're all rose-colored. I like the way all that rose color looks against those black cedars, and sometimes I kind of relax my eyes so that it all blends together. Little Shep and me have this game we play where his name is Barry and mine is Jennifer. Whenever we use those names, we feel great. It doesn't matter what we're doing as long as we do it as Barry and Jennifer. We're playing Barry and Jennifer in the Civil War behind the crepe myrtles, and it is so hot. You just know the Yankees are coming. Then out of nowhere, we get one of those afternoon rains that cools things off and makes the air smell fresh. We stand out there and let ourselves get soaking wet. The sun is starting to peek out from behind that scum of gray sky, and light trickles down through the cedars. The rain stops as quick as it comes, and we're standing in a real clean spot, and we both know it. Little Shep says in a fake accent,
"Jennifer, shall we go back to the big house?"
I say, "Oh, yes, Barry, let's." And we hold each other's hands, like we never do when we're our real selves. My hair is hanging down heavy on my shoulders, and when the water drips, it tickles and feels good on my skin. We walk back to the veranda, and Mama eyes me like she's never seen me before, like she's studying me. I pull my halter top down where it slid up a little. I don't know why she is looking at me like that. I haven't done anything. Without taking her eyes off me, she announces, "Siddeley, you are too grown up to have all that hair hanging down to your butt." Then she grinds out her cigarette in a crystal ashtray that is full of butts and says to Caro, "Why don't you give Sitta one of your haircuts? It's something that's long overdue." Caro is famous for cutting hair. Not like a real beautician, but just when she feels like it. She cut her own hair in all these different angles, and she looks sort of like a skinny Ingrid Bergman. She gets up and lifts my hair off my neck and twists it softly in her hand. I have always been a sucker for anyone who wants to touch my head, as long as they're not pulling at it the way Mama does.
It's so thick, Caro says. This is just too much hair. Don't you get tired of the weight of it, Sitta?
I have never gotten tired from my hair before, but I say, yes, ma'am, I do. I just get exhausted sometimes. I adore having them all look at my hair. They all get into the act. Miss Lucille runs and gets some yellow-handled kitchen scissors and a brush and a hand mirror. They sit me on a stool on the veranda, and Caro starts cutting. I close my eyes and just listen to the scissors and the dripping of the rain off the magnolia leaves.